This program is called The Untrained Eye. Over in London, there's a group that has a good time insisting that no matter what anybody says, the Earth is actually flat. Back in the 1960s, when the United States sent its first orbiter around the Earth, it sent back pictures, and the American ambassador thought it would be fun to have the head of the English Flat Earth Society come over and look at them. That gentleman was very kind about it. He came over, he looked at the pictures, he said how great they were, and then he said, "It is amazing how, to the untrained eye, the Earth looks round." What was so funny about this was that he was making fun of experts. Every time an expert is shown to be dead wrong by common sense, his response is always, "Well, that's the way it looks to the untrained eye. Only an expert like me understands why what you consider reality doesn't make sense." We say this around us all the time. Whenever people crack down on crime, crime goes down. In Europe, the big drive has been getting rid of the death penalty and being kind to criminals and outlawing guns. We had the same thing in the United States in the 1960s, and Europe is experiencing exactly what we did. The crime rate in Europe is going out of sight. Everybody falls down and worships, especially the respectable conservatives, when somebody mentions diversity. Now, diversity is an unqualified disaster. And any person with common sense can see that. In Europe, once again, the crime rate is going out of sight. They've had chronic unemployment, so they're bringing in millions of immigrants from the third world. And they call it diversity, and they say it's good. They don't give any reason for it. People keep pointing out that it's an unqualified disaster, and their response is, "Yes, to the untrained eye, it looks like an unqualified disaster." So this program is dedicated to the untrained eye. To the untrained eye that sees silliness, facts, and reality. If you go to any university campus in America, you will find that they have some of the weirdest solutions to social problems that anyone could imagine. For example, liberals all agree, and of course almost every professor is a liberal, that the one thing that the United States Armed Forces are not allowed to do is to defend the borders of the United States. Now, this is historical. No society in human history has ever said that the thing that the armed forces were not allowed to do was to protect the borders. That has been the function of armed forces. That was the reason armed forces were created in the first place. But today, we have the dubious distinct being the first country in all of recorded history, and I dare say in all of unrecorded history, to say that the armed forces cannot defend the borders. Another proposition has to do with the fact that the crime rate, since World War II, has gone up so enormously. Violent crime has increased geometrically. So the way to deal with this, we're told, is to disarm the honest people. We all know that this has nothing to do with disarming the criminals. There are 60 million guns at least in the United States. The criminals have all they want. And in fact, in England, where the gun laws are absolutely draconian, criminals can get hold of guns pretty well anytime they want to. But every nation today, or every country today, agrees that the way that you deal with the geometrically increasing crime rate and the danger to honest citizens who try to go about their daily lives or who are trying to live safely inside their homes, the way you deal with this is to disarm them. In Britain, where they have these draconian gun laws, and they're trying to outlaw toy pistols too, about 43% of the burglaries are known as hot burglaries. A hot burglary is a burglary where criminals no longer bother to wait around until the family leaves. They simply walk into the house and take what they want, and the family, including the father, cowers back in the corner like a good civilized man and whimpers while the criminals beat up or rape or do whatever they feel like doing. Britain used to be an enormously crime-free place. Now, your chances of getting robbed or a burglary in your house are higher than the chances are in New York City. People don't like to talk about this because Europe has these progressive laws that the liberals approve of so much. But the crime rate is staggering and getting worse. So is the unemployment rate, of course. The crimes, of course, are disproportionately committed by minority groups. So the solution to this, social scientists tell us, is diversity, to bring in more minority groups. And the unemployment rate in Europe is very high. So the solution to this, social scientists tell everybody with a perfectly straight face, is to bring in more immigrants, to increase the labor supply when there is already too much labor. The reason that tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of little boys were molested by Catholic priests, and those priests were moved from one parish to another without any punishment or any prevention, was precisely because the bishops of the Catholic Church were following the dictates of the latest social science theory. Criminologists told them that child molesters needed to be cured. They needed to be treated, not punished. We heard the same theory about all criminals back during the 1960s when criminologists and sociologists and psychologists and psychiatrists were all agreeing that society was to blame when someone committed crime after crime after crime. The thing to do, they said, was to rehabilitate these people who were merely victims of society. So the crime rate increased in Europe. It skyrocketed in America as it is now skyrocketing in Europe. Now, while it is true that historically it is a completely novel idea that in order to get rid of crime or in order to deal with increasing amounts of violence against our citizens, one needs to disarm those citizens. Other countries have had disarmament for the peasants, but that was not to protect the peasants. That was just the opposite. The idea of disarming the peasants when the samurai ruled Japan was to make sure that the peasants were absolutely subject to the samurai. A samurai could kill anybody he felt like, that is to say, any peasant he felt like killing. But the idea that you protect a person who is terrified going home on a dark street, or a person who is terrified in his home, by preventing that person from having a weapon, is unique to our age. These insane ravings by social scientists are in specifics brand new. That is to say, no society before has ever thought that you protect somebody at night on a dark street by making sure he is disarmed and the criminal has the right to be armed, or that the armed services have no right to protect the border. In specifics, these are new things, unique things. But don't get the idea that the disease of which this is a symptom is new. There's nothing new about it. This is a major theme of my book, Why Johnny Can't Think, America's Professor Priesthood, which you can find, and I hope you will, at readbob.com. This is a symptom of a very old historical problem. Social science is primitive. It is a primitive field. In fact, that is something that every social scientist will tell you right off the bat. His field, compared to physics or chemistry or the hard sciences, is primitive. What he does not tell you, and the people who don't tell you that include our professional historians because they're part of the social scientist elite, the social scientist group, is that all primitive sciences say stupid things, counterintuitive things, uniquely dumb things, and that is not new. The problem is that a new or primitive field, like our social sciences, doesn't realize that this is a normal symptom of a primitive field. Medicine killed George Washington. George Washington was bled to death. In December of 1799, George Washington contracted pneumonia. It was December of 1799, and medical science had a cure for pneumonia and a lot of other diseases. What the doctors did to George Washington was to open his veins. They let out 3 or 4 pints of blood. Human body contains about 10 to 12 pints of blood. If you take out 6 pints, the person normally dies, even if he's perfectly healthy. So they dumped out 3 or 4 pints of George Washington's blood. They did this because before the birth of Christ, a physician named Galen had come up with a theory of humors. The theory of humors said that there were 4 humors in the body, and disease was caused by the fact that these humors got out of balance. Actually, there's no such thing as humors. But Galen said that the way to cure disease was to cut open a vein and balance the humors. There were too many humors in one part, or the wrong kind of humors in one part of the body, so if you cut the veins and let out blood, it would balance them back. So, 18 and a half centuries after Galen wrote this down in Latin, George Washington was bled to death. Millions of people were bled to death. Medicine had no cures, and therefore it made up some. Now, the reason that Galen and his theory were accepted was because they were written in Latin. They came from classical times, and the physicians, the university physicians, could read Latin. The average person with common sense observed century after century that if you cut the blood out of somebody who was fighting pneumonia or any other disease, which we now know as bacteriological disease, they die. And the doctors said, well, that is what a hick would think. The hick is just paying attention to what he sees. He doesn't know the depths of the sciences. He doesn't know Latin. Joe Sobrin, in his foreword to my book, Why Johnny Can't Thank America's Professor Priesthood, which I will continue reminding you is available at readbob.com, points out that Aristotle wrote in Greek that a woman is born with 1 less tooth than men are born with. Men have 1 more tooth than women, said the great Aristotle, and every college graduate for 2,000 years believed that. When you think about it, this is not really a very hard proposition to test. If men have 1 more tooth than women, then either the man or the woman has an extra tooth. And that extra tooth is just hanging there. If you look at some child, boy child and girl child, who still has all his permanent teeth, which happened even in the old days, you will find that there are no teeth just hanging there. There will be an even number of teeth in a girl and in a boy. So even if Aristotle was right, if both of them have even numbers, then men must have 2 more teeth than women. Or you could just count the teeth. No one did that, because Aristotle had written in Greek that a man has 1 more tooth than a woman. So, college graduates believed for 2,000 years what Aristotle told them, because they had spent a lot of time learning Greek. They didn't want to be repeating what the average peasant was repeating, because the average peasant didn't read Greek. So today, the average citizen, who is not a college graduate, would say, I'd be a lot safer on a dark street in the middle of the night if I had a weapon on me. I am not safe if the only person who has a weapon is the criminal. We have hundreds of thousands of troops. We're spending tens of billions of dollars to protect Iraq's borders with our armed forces. But it is verboten for any of those armed forces to protect our own border. Something like 60% of the population of the United States, even the college graduates, realize that this proposition is insane. But the so-called intellectuals, the social scientists, say that that is the hick point of view. Just as the doctors said that the idea that bleeding someone made them weaker was the hick point of view. I can remember very well when the idea that criminals were victims of society back in the 1960s was the point of view that every educated person was supposed to have. And anybody who disagreed with it was a hick. We are, in fact, beginning to understand who the hicks really are. The hicks are the people who take their college professors, their social science professors, seriously. I point out in Why Johnny Can't Think, America's Professor Priesthood, that a liberal is simply a person who has not outgrown his college education. I give endless examples of this, but what I am reciting is what was the absolute doctrine during the 1960s. All of the hippies running around taking the side of the criminals were, when I was young, considered enlightened, modern opinion. Now they're considered nutcases, and they don't like to repeat, the older hippies today don't like to repeat the slogans that they were running around with back then. Most of the things that social scientists come up with are actually insane. They actually make no sense at all. But this is not a new thing to happen in a primitive field of study. Back in the 1840s, when medicine was a primitive field of study, there was a disease that killed millions of women and newborns that was called puerperal fever, which is a technical term. It was called childbed fever by us peasants. Women died in droves. And in Budapest, in one hospital, the ward of where the doctors delivered the children had a tremendous rate of puerperal fever. In fact, women would scream and fight if they found out that they were going to this infamous ward too. One of the doctors working in this infamous ward too was named Ignaz Semmelweis. He is one of many of the heroes and tragic heroes of medicine. A friend of Dr. Semmelweis's died horribly because he had cut his finger while he was dissecting a body. Semmelweis noticed that the symptoms that this man had were exactly the same symptoms that the women who died after childbirth had in that infamous Ward 2. What had been happening was that the doctors who delivered the babies in Ward 2 had been dissecting corpses. They would go straight from dissecting corpses, wash their hands sometimes with soap and water, if at all, and deliver babies, and the women and the babies died. You would think that the doctors would have been very happy to find out why people were dying in their hospital. Semmelweis found that what was needed was for doctors to wash their hands not in soap and water, but in a mild solution of carbolic acid. That would kill the microbes and the poisons, and take off the poisons that were on the doctor's hands. Semmelweis got into a lot of trouble when he pointed this out. Now, he had a record by the time he announced this theory of being the one doctor in Ward 2 who delivered babies without this huge rate of death by puerperal fever. He had the statistics to prove it. The problem with it was that doctors had a much more complicated theory of why women died in Ward 2. They said it was psychosomatic. In case you think psychosomatic is some sort of new term, it isn't. It's very complicated. It sounds good. And this was one of many very complex theories that the doctors had come up with. They were deeply insulted at this idea that what they needed to do was to wash their hands in carbolic acid. So the women kept dying. The babies kept dying. Ward 2 remained a horror unit. And all over the world, millions of babies and mothers were dying because doctors would not wash their hands in carbolic acid. Semmelweis continued his fight all his life. There's a wonderful book written about 1950 called The Cry and the Covenant. It is a historical fiction, but it is true. The situation itself is true. And it goes through his life as he fought hopelessly and got fired from job after job while begging doctors to wash their hands in carbolic acid before delivering babies. Semmelweis died in a madhouse. He actually went insane after 20 or 30 years of fighting this fight, of watching the agony and the death, pointing out the facts, and hearing doctors denounce him for being what you might call a medical hick. This business of washing their hands in carbolic acid was beneath their dignity. So the fact that social scientists continue to demand that criminals be rehabilitated, their constant statements in the media about how much money we spend on punishment and how little money we spend on rehabilitation. Well, we could spend a lot of money. Instead of spending it on punishment, we could spend money hiring people to pray for the hardened criminals. Now, this would sound better. You could say the same thing. Do you realize that we spend billions every year on punishing criminals, but just a few million dollars a year on prayers that they will stop committing these crimes? Well, that sounds a lot better. But the fact is, those prayers statistically probably work better than rehabilitation does when you're dealing with hardened criminals. However, rehabilitation of repeat criminals is still a multi-billion dollar industry, and social scientists insist that that's the way to go. It doesn't work, but it sounds good. So primitive social science is doing exactly what primitive medicine did. It's nothing new. It is true that they are raving like lunatics, but we pay them to rave like lunatics. We pay doctors to cut the vein. The solution to tuberculosis until 1882 was horse riding. Doctors insisted that if a person with tuberculosis would ride a horse all the time, he would get rid of his tuberculosis. Well, I think you can guess how many people actually got rid of their tuberculosis by horse riding. In 1882, the bacteria that caused tuberculosis was discovered by Dr. Robert Koch in Germany. But until that time, the doctors just kept insisting that you needed, that a person with tuberculosis had to learn to be like a Tartar. He had to learn to live on the back of a horse. We all know about Doc Holliday. He died in his 30s of tuberculosis. They said that he should go out west to get rid of his tuberculosis where the air was pure. They also recommended that people go to mineral baths, which actually made the tuberculosis worse because it burned the lungs. But this is routine. This is not unusual. The people, the professionals in a primitive science are always barbarians. They're always the real hicks. If you went to a doctor with a headache 500 years ago in Germany, he would have probably opened your veins. Meanwhile, the ignorant old women who could not only read Latin or Greek, they couldn't even read anything, were discovering that the bark of a particular tree, if chewed, would get rid of headaches. We finally started studying what they were talking about and discovered aspirin was inside those pieces of bark that they were chewing on. Now, a lot of people would prefer to say that liberalism and leftism come from some sort of plot or from powerful evil forces. Well, there's a certain amount of truth to that. There are people who actually hate the public, especially the American public, who will say that social scientists are very brilliant people and everything they do works. These people always take the side of the criminal against the average citizen. But they have to have something to work with. And this is the problem. I have the same problem that Semmelweis had. I'm trying to point out to people who know all about large conspiracies or people who are actually trying to hurt other people. They know a lot about these things, and they want to talk about these things because they're much more exciting. Just as doctors wanted to talk about psychosomatic causes of purple fever rather than simple things like, is this woman dying because I carried germs on my hand, or I did an autopsy yesterday and the poisons are not off my hands? I have exactly the same problem with people who love giant conspiracies or giant forces of evil. It is true that those forces exist, but those forces have to have something to work with. So I'm talking about something a lot like carbolic acid. Let's look at the basics first. And that is what I do in Why Johnny Can't Think, America's Professor Priesthood. What evil people have to work with in this case is described by Joe Sobrin in his foreword to my book, America's Professor Priesthood. I prefer that name. It's called Why Johnny Can't Think, America's Professor Priesthood. Joe points out that in the Middle Ages, the real enemies of progress were not the ignorant, but the learned. As I say, the college graduates of the day. This has been put another way in a statement that I think everybody should take to heart. And that is, human progress is not retarded so much by what we don't know as it is by what we think we know. We have some sort of solution, usually a nutcase solution, at the early stages, and we stick with it because a lot of people have a lot of time devoted to it. So the theory of Galen was accepted largely because all of those university doctors had spent a lot of time, a lot of effort in learning Latin and Greek, in learning a history that the peasants didn't know about. Social scientists don't want to deal in common sense. They want to deal in obscurities, just like the people who only concentrate on evil forces at work want to concentrate on their exciting business. They spend a lot of time learning about it, and they simply don't want to talk about something as simple or as peasant-like as what I'm talking about here. But the fact is, colleges have been putting out nutcases for at least 60 years. They have been putting out millions and tens of millions of liberals who actually believe in the primitive social sciences and who think that the nutcase stuff they're coming up with is A, something they thought of, and B, the latest news from the really enlightened community. I am hoping that now is the time that we're beginning to catch on to this. We've been trying these liberal solutions for 50 years now. They have, without exception, been total disasters. Socialism, which is the idea that a bunch of professors should plan the economy, is pretty thoroughly discredited now. In fact, today, the people who used to say that the professor should run the economy, in other words, those who preach socialism, the same professors today are now saying professors should run the economy in the name of environmentalism. to save the environment, as in the case of the Kyoto Treaty, a bunch of intellectuals have to get together and dictate the world's economy. All of the socialists, when the Soviet Union collapsed, became environmentalists. And you can look it up, look up the names, and you'll find that it was like one mass conversion. All of these ex-socialists, whose ideal system was discredited by the collapse of the Soviet Union and by the fact it never worked anywhere, these same people are now the environmentalists. There was an environmentalist movement before socialism began to be laughed at, but it's a real biggie now, because these people want professors to run the economy, and they have found that they have a new hobby horse, environmentalism, rather than the old hobby horse, socialism. In both primitive medicine and in today's primitive social sciences, we go back to the adage that every person should repeat to himself at least once a day. Progress is retarded not by what we don't know, but by what we think we know. Primitive doctors thought they knew how to cure people. Primitive social scientists think they know the solution to the world's problems. But both were catastrophic failures. So how did primitive medicine react to common sense? It suppressed it. It suppressed it in the name of what the university doctors thought they knew. So Dr. Semmelweis lost job after job. He was ridiculed. He was called a disgrace to the medical profession. I quote in Why Johnny Can't Think, America's Professor Priesthood, a lengthy statement by Louis XIV's physician in the 1600s, in which he denounced the idea that syphilis, which was a new disease in Europe that had come from the American Indians, was caused by tiny little animals that can't be seen, in other words, bacteria. And he quoted a long list of doctors who had said that syphilis was caused by bacteria, which they didn't call them bacteria, but they described them beautifully. All of these were hick doctors, most of them Germans, and they were denounced roundly over and over and over for this crazy idea. Because if this crazy idea that these little animals were causing syphilis were accepted, the whole theory of medicine, as this great doctor said, would fall to the ground. He said, then you could say that, and then he gave a list of diseases which in fact are bacteriological diseases. And he said, you could say, if you accept this crazy idea, that all of these diseases are caused by these little animals. Well, it turns out these diseases were caused by the little animals. Social scientists today will say that if you start punishing criminals and just dealing with them in this primitive way, that the whole theory of social science will fall to the ground. Well, they did right. It would. They say that if we accept race as an important factor, as a genetic thing, as a genetic problem, then we will all become Nazis and we will stop educating people, we will stop trying to provide good environments and so forth. The whole theory of social science will fall to the ground. Well, a good deal of the theory of social science will fall to the ground. But essentially, what happened in primitive medicine was that the university doctors became a bunch of thugs. They suppressed anything that worked that was contrary to their theories. Does this sound familiar? I think anybody who has been on a university campus or seen academia in action has seen that academia and the media and all the other people who have not outgrown their college education have become thugs. They suppress anything that works. In Miami, in Charleston, South Carolina, in New York City, the government cracked down on crime hard, and the crime rate dropped like a rock. Then, these policies were reversed by the enlightened community, and the crime rate went right back up. The people who enforced these things, these ideas, not Mayor Giuliani, but the people under him, were treated very poorly. And that happened in Miami, that happened in Charleston, and those are just the examples I know about. They were considered hicks, and despite the fact that their policies worked, their policies were abandoned. They were abandoned because enlightened opinion thought it knew how to deal with these problems, and every time they tried to deal with these problems, the problems got worse, just as they did when Dr. Semmelweis's advice was not followed in Ward 2. All of this is straight logic. None of this requires you to study Latin or Greek or special cases. You just have to look at what's in front of you. The real hicks in our society are obviously the people who shout hick most loudly. The real hicks in our society are the media, university professors, and above all, the tens of millions of college graduates who have, or people who attended some college, who have never outgrown their exposure to this college insanity of primitive social science. The same thing was true in medicine. The real hicks were the university doctors who were so obsessed with Latin and Greek and their superiority to the entire rest of the human race that they blindly followed treatments that caused agony and death to millions of people. Finally, the university doctors were actually overthrown. They were forced because people were tired of dying and tired of the agony. They were forced to accept rationality. A doctor today is not particularly ashamed to wash his hands, even though he still uses Latin and Greek phrases, and anatomy is still very impressive. A doctor wastes a lot of good time learning all these Latin words for bones and parts of the body. But doctors had become at least partially rational. The social scientists, as I point out in my book, now have made themselves a very large group of enemies. We could exploit that to make society rational again. There are tens of millions of young people who are paying off their college loans. It is now policy that these back-breaking loans that students had to have to attend 4 years of college indoctrination can't even be avoided by bankruptcy. The person still has to pay off those dollars that go to support the professors who are putting out more idiots, more leftists every day, millions of them. Every young person who is thinking about a family has to consider that tuition costs are rising and rising and rising out of sight. He has to plan his life not only around paying off his college debts for himself, but then in saving money to support all those professors by paying his children's tuition. This is becoming an intolerable burden, and there is a frustrated rebellion there. If we talked common sense, as I discuss in Why Johnny Can't Think America's Professor Priesthood, we could do something political. The time has come. The 60s, when everybody accepted this idea that enlightened thinking came from the campuses. Those days are gone. We are now in an age when people are realizing who the real Hicks are. And it's not just a theoretical realization. Every young person who is paying off those loans, we're talking about tens of millions of young people, will say, or at least everyone I've met will say, that he was cheated. Young people resent the fact that they have to start their families later, not only after 4 years of pointless school, but also after 10 years of paying off these back-breaking debts. Then they have to start thinking about the tuition for their children, if they're going to have children. This is insane. We are paying for this giant indoctrination. I used to be part of the thing myself. I used to be a professor. The reason I'm not a professor anymore is largely because I had read the history of medicine before I ever went to college. I went to college when I was 16, and my brother was in medical school, and I had read these books on the history of medicine, and when I ran into the social scientists making these absurd statements, even in the 50s, I realized this, that there was a rat here somewhere. Well, the rat is stinking a lot now, and we could actually cause a rebellion, or at least take part in the rebellion, which is what my book is all about. I spent my life in practical politics. People are always saying, how do we get to the young people? How do we get our ideas to the young people? And while they're asking that, I will explain how we get these ideas to the young people and what ideas we should get to the young people. But they're too busy being depressed and talking about great conspiracies and asking each other over and over, how do we get to the young people? Well, I'm sort of like Dr. Semmelweis. Wash your hands. Wash your hands of the idea that huge books exposing conspiracies are by themselves going to change the world. Get down at the political level. Get down at the level where young people are actually being persecuted, where there's an actual rebellion growing, and get in on it. On the details, I have plenty of them. I know a lot about academia. I ran an oversight unit on Capitol Hill for the Education and Labor Committee. I know a great deal about these things and how to approach them. But first, people have to stop shouting at each other and pay attention to the basic business of carbolic acid and washing the hands, of getting down on the political level. I have pointed out to people that I'm 64 years old. You'd better listen to me while I'm still here. I don't have anything to gain by this, but what I do have to gain by this is trying to make my society sane again. I hope you will go to readbob.com and help me to do this.